First, the Summit County Council scheduled to hold a final public hearing on next year's budget and approve it at its final meeting of the year tomorrow. In the studio, I have Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie.
First, let's just start with last week's Transportation Summit. You wanted to meet with council members prior to scheduling sort of a retreat with Park City Council to talk about the future of transit. Seemed to be a lot of mudslinging at the meeting, some personal attacks when council members called Park City staffers territorial, exclusive, secretive, not willing to work together, and wanting to maintain control of the transit system. So given that, and the fact that the county is now, I believe, an equal partner financially in the transit system, it sounded like when you meet with the Park City Council, you'll have a, is it too harsh to say, a list of demands?
Well, I don't think demands. I think really we're looking, I think the council is looking to have a discussion. You know, it's been growing over the years where, you know, both entities have worked hard to put in place significant revenues in order to expand transit services in the area and even start to look beyond into Wasatch County down to Heber. We've expanded to Camas. We'd like to do more expansion out to the rest of the county and you know, perhaps enhance services down to Salt Lake City as well. All of that means, you know, that the county council, since they're receiving that revenue, has an opinion on how to deal with that and what to project and what things we should be trying to do in the future. Right now, our structure under a contract to provide transit services, which, you know, the operations of transit have been going very well. We've just transferred to winter service and we're going great guns in that regard. You know, I think they're looking at, okay, what does it look like in the future about how we participate and how the county participates and how the county's voice is heard within that process of how those revenues are programmed and how we provide and what we're total transit service and what is our overall goal of getting more people out of cars and onto buses.
How much is Summit County putting into the transit?
Well, you know, right now, so I was just looking, you know, back through the budget as we prepare for that. You know, if you go back to 2015, our revenues were somewhere between about $2.5 million and $3 million for transit services. We're budgeting about $9.68 million of revenues that will go towards transit in one form or another. So, you know, that significant growth brings with it responsibility to those dollars and those that are paying those dollars in order to provide the best system that we can provide. And I think both entities are wanting to do that.
Yeah. I think as I heard it put, the council, county council, just kind of long for the ride and really wants to be put into the driver's seat.
Yeah, I mean, and if you really, realistically, you go back to the 2015 year and before, you know, we really weren't positioned to do that. We didn't have expertise on staff. We didn't have the revenues to really participate more than we already were. And, you know, going back to the original agreements of 2006 and revised in 2009, I think there was less interest at those times by the county council and county commissions to really be part of the governance of that system. And, you know, with the increased revenues and with increased interest in solving traffic, transportation and congestion problems in the county, I think the council wants to talk about that.
Mm-hmm. But when we're talking about, you know, when the county council feels like the municipality is not willing to work together, you think that one way to maybe
I don't even think that's a fair characterization. We haven't had that conversation to talk about willingness. It's not a lack of willingness to talk about it. I think the city, Park City, has been a great partner in transit. I think it's just simply we haven't gotten around to talking about the modern reality of where we're at with the transit system.
And the modern reality for Summit County,
that's
it sounds
correct.
Like a regional transit system as opposed to a municipal transit system.
That is one of the options. There's a whole range of options that could be discussed in order to satisfy what the county council might talk about. And the whole point of the meeting the other day was to really get the county council centered on what is the message you want to send.
And what do you think that message is? Because that's what you're kind of synthesizing.
Yeah, and I think really the message is that they want to talk more about how do all of the entities involved with transit, whether they be just Park City and Summit County at this present time, or really in the future, if there's more people more entities participating in that, how do we do it? Yeah. And how do we do it fairly?
And a regional board, as I think Caroline Rodriguez explained, I mean, it takes a few people from each of these entities, and there's, right?
Yeah,
it's a group decision as opposed to a municipal-driven decision.
Yeah, absolutely. There are best practices out there. You know, I've participated in a couple of those over my tenure in transportation planning in my early career. So there's a lot of stuff to look at in order to come to that. And I think that's the main point. And, you know, we haven't had those deep conversations between the two entities yet.
And I guess if we were to look at the winter routes that we are running now, would there be a route that the county would be running if it had more say?
You know, that's certainly an extreme position that could be taken, that there's something that the county really wants to take control of. And but, you know, it could also be very inefficient to do it that way, to have duplicative administration around operations. And that doesn't serve the stretch of that dollar as well. So that's part of the conversation that has to be had.
Okay, but no meeting set at this point?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're very realistic. We know that Park City Municipal Corporation, the transit system especially, is very busy in January and going into February with World Cup following up on Sundance. So I would expect those conversations really to happen after that point.
All right. First Friday fireworks there at the base of Canyons Village. We heard a lot of complaints from those with animals who don't like fireworks to those who did know about the show, and say that also those others saying that shooting off fireworks really goes against the county's sustainability and clean air goals. So is this going to be reconsidered, or is this a done deal?
Well, I think for this season, certainly the plans have been put in place and the permits have been issued to do those fireworks. I think the reaction is certainly going to cause some discussion within the community, some discussion between the county and the Canyons or any other entity that would want to do something similar like that. You know, we really don't have any fireworks restrictions per se in the county, and this may bring up that discussion. I mean, certainly when we're in our summer season, in the traditional times for fireworks, we're also usually dealing with dry weather and fire bans and things like that. So it's a totally different situation in that point. When we do have fireworks at those times of years, we do also hear complaints from the same types of largely from folks with animals. So, you know, I think there will be a discussion about that.
Yeah. Now, did the council vote on it, or is this a low impact permit
It's not even a low impact permit. It's a special event permit. So that's under my purview.
So you had approved
that's correct.
It and didn't bring it to the council for discussion.
That it does not go to the council.
All right. Let's take a look at Wednesday's agenda, presentation on the Summit County Fair and how it went this year. One interesting thing was a pie chart showing that of the attendees, the largest percentage of those showing up, no surprise from North Summit, but Park City, a distant
second. Yeah, they had a pretty good representation there, didn't they? Mm-hmm. I noticed that reading through the staff report as well. That's been a big concentration of the Fair Board over the years that I've been manager, to try and get more Park City participation. Probably the other thing to notice there is the Park City participation was higher than South Summit participation. So maybe we need to provide some focus in that area as well.
Or maybe free bus service. I think maybe that was a draw.
That could be. And so we'll probably be looking at as we go into the next year.
Okay. Anything else that needs to be discussed with
we have another retirement proclamation coming forward to the county council this week, and we had two last week. I just noticed that we had 58 years of experience that's just retired in the last couple of months, and I want to acknowledge the folks that are retiring, and wish them well, and thank them for their public service.
RAP tax awards for recreation. Worth noting again that the available RAP money larger than the total amount of requests, which I think maybe a first time ever. So everybody got everything they asked for?
They actually, and there were a couple of grants that actually got a little bit more since the committee was so impressed with their project. The committee did a really good job, as they explained last week with one of the grantees, North Summit Recreation District. They certainly still want to support their program to develop their park. But there's still some expended funds from some previous grants going back as early as 2012. So they really want them to be prudent with that and finish up those projects first before this next set of grant money goes out.
At 4:30, the council will hear from TCFC, and there's no staff report in the packet. So what's this about?
There is a staff report in the packet now. What it is that there's some obligations that they have under their revised development agreement, one of them being a transportation plan that they're working very closely with us on. And then a couple of other items are road projects that they have working but have not gotten to the final completion of those. And they're being very upfront, maybe in comparison to some past practices in the canyons, to come forward to the county council and say, "Hey, we're not done with these, and we need some more time." But they want to be upfront and communicate to the community and to the council that they're still working on them. They have their plans in place, but they just don't want to get behind on these obligations.
Well, the agenda item notes discussion and possible action for modification to the conditions of this amended development agreement. So what is it that they're asking for?
Well, if you recall back when I started as manager and Bob Jasper as manager had been doing this beforehand, there were several obligations like the golf course that just went on for years and years and years. Notices of violation, I'm not going to get the exact term yet, but they were in violation of the development agreement. And they're trying to make sure that they stay in compliance with the development agreement. So they've applied for a modification of that so that they stay within the bounds of their dates.
Okay, so this is being brought up, I guess, to deal with some kind of deadline.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay.
That's correct.
Who is TCFC and what is it that they do? I mean, I've read both that they own the land at the canyons. I've also heard that they just manage the land at the canyons.
I think they do both. So they are a private entity that own property, some property at the canyons. They work within the Canyons Village Master Association as one of the members of that. There are other members that are also property owners to manage the overall canyons. So they are owners of several of the undeveloped properties at the canyons.
We know that, at one point, Larry White was the CEO of TCFC. Is that still the case?
He still is there. That's correct.
And who else are the principals of this group? I mean, word is that Jack Bistricer of Talisker is back.
He is still involved with TCFC, and that has not ended. I'm not privy to what interest he has in that.
And it doesn't matter that we know that or not? Or?
Well, I mean, so our interest is that they fulfill the terms of the development agreement. And we're very encouraged by the fact that they're coming forward and working with us publicly about that instead of just letting things slide.
All right. And I should note, Jack Bistricer, of course, the president, founder, CEO of Talisker, which did at one point own all of that land there at the base of the canyons, as well as up at Empire Pass, Toohey, many places.
Quite a bit of history there, correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But all you know is that he's still involved somehow in TCFC.
That is correct.
Hmm. Let's see. Also on the agenda, a change in the fee schedule. Really, the only substantive item there is the annual trash fee going up $4 a year to $40 a year.
That's correct. And, you know, the probably the biggest question we've gotten about that is annual versus monthly. It is annual, and customers will see that on their annual collection fee that is collected by Republic Services, and that will come out next July, if that's adopted by the council.
All right. And then the budget hearing, any changes in it since we talked last week?
No. The council did not make any substantive changes last week during their first hearing. I think we've listened very well to them and have captured everything that they wanted to change from my recommendation. I think we're ready to go. You never know. There could be something right at the end.
Is the county still committed to going forward with that $100,000 to plan?
That's still in there. I think that's one of the items we're going to hear some more discussion about. Of course, we had Charlie Sturgis in last week to give his opinion of where some monies like that could be spent, as opposed to doing a planning effort versus some infrastructure on the ground. Of course, you've heard Pat Putt give his take on that. So I think we'll still have some debate on that.
And yesterday afternoon, council also meeting with our local legislators.
Yes.
Anything in particular?
Well, it's become second year in a row, so now it's a two-year tradition to formally meet with our legislative members before the session, simply to hear kind of their take on some priorities that within the session that are going to happen, as well as maybe some specific things that they're working on. And then it's an opportunity for us to mingle a little bit and provide some presentations on what our priorities are so that they hear that directly from us. And, that will just start the conversation because there are going to be some things that the county pushes this year that we'll be working with those legislators on.
What is Summit County's agenda of priorities?
Well, several things. If you look at the topics, probably water quality is one of the big ones. And that gets to everything from forest health to septic systems and sewer and sensitive lands. So we'll be doing some work with the legislature on that. And then there'll be things that probably we have to defend against, whether they be land use regulation changes or the like that could come up.
Mm-hmm. Anything about liquor laws and how that kind of came down last year?
Yeah, I haven't heard anything projected. I've talked to our legislators about that, about whether they're expecting anything. I haven't heard anything yet.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention, then?
I've got nothing else, Leslie.
Okay. Tom, thanks for your time this
morning. Thank you so much.
Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. So we won't see you till next year.
That's correct. Yeah,
okay. So long. KPCW News Time now, 8:32. It's the local news hour on KPCW. Park City Planning Commission meeting tomorrow starting at 5:30 in the City Council Chambers of the Marsac Building. In the studio with a preview, Planning Director Bruce Erickson. Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Let's see. The issue of gravel and landscaping and driveway standards back on the agenda, but will once again be continued?
It'll be continued again, and I owe the public an explanation. We were pretty far down the road on this one, and everything was working very smoothly. We tried to incorporate some wildland fire defensible space issues into the code and add additional places where gravel could go for wildland fire. And we kind of hit a roadblock trying to make sure we were fair to the historic districts and trying to figure out how to use the gravel for wildland fire on the historic districts. As you know, our districts are at the bottom of some of our steepest slopes in the Oak Brush and the most threatened portions of our community. And so we were rolling along pretty good on that. And what we wanted to do is sit down and just make sure we were doing exactly the right thing and do a little bit more outreach on it. So it's moving. It's my fault for pulling it off, but I wanted to make sure we were doing the right thing in the historic district.
Yeah. And, some of the stories we've heard from those devastating fires in California is that property owners had defensible space and it didn't matter.
Well, yeah, there's a couple things going on there. And I don't want to step on the toes of the fire marshal or the fire district. They're much more better, if you will, at fighting fire. But, they're in a different ecotone, a different ecosystem. They have sustained winds and lower humidity than we do, and slightly different fire regime. So we're looking, and we've actually pulled the code now from Ventura County, California, and San Diego, California. We're pulling the codes from Sun Valley right now, which is much more consistent with what we have. And we're taking a look and just trying to make sure that we're doing the right thing without plowing a one-mile-wide road around our site. San Diego's is actually pretty good. So's Ventura County. We'll share those with the fire district and our fire marshal and trying to come to some conclusions. Just on that note, we had a coordinating meeting with Wasatch County that was organized by Planner Whetstone, consistent with the Deer Crest Development Agreement. And we also agreed to reach out to Wasatch County on trying to be consistent with wildland fire and how we do defensible space. So it's a big project. It's very, very complex, lots of moving parts. While we're not quite on the agenda yet, if you'll permit me to send a shout out to Pat Putt, the community development director in Summit County. Our lighting code is as old as I am, and so he's 12 years ahead of us. And what I will do is reach out to Pat and see if we can do a coordination, because we're halfway done with a new night sky lighting ordinance. We're getting some complaints in the historic district and some complaints in some of our larger hot lot subdivisions where folks are kind of stepping out of line and adding more lights than they probably should be.
Speaking of coordination on the agenda, Planning Commissioners John Kenworthy and Mark Sletten scheduled to be named to the Transportation Master Plan Technical Advisory Committee, as we were talking with Tom Fisher. Shouldn't we be doing a joint transportation master plan rather than a separate master plan, transportation plan?
Well, there are some other things going on in the background. This one is an update, in effect, to one of the elements of our general plan. Alfred Knotts and Julia Collins are coordinating with Summit County. They sit on a couple of joint committees with the county, including an acronym called JTAB. And they're working on the bus system with the county. So transportation is highly coordinated, and this is just one of the elements to get our general plan in alignment with what we want for our transportation goals. It also wants to align with our active transportation planning, which is scooters and e-bikes and bicycles and bike paths and all the other stuff that needs to happen out there. So I feel pretty good about it right now. We'll let those guys run a little bit and let John and Mark. Mark was on the committee the last time he was on the Planning Commission, so he knows what's going on, and they'll do a good job for us.
Let's see, Kimball Garage Special Events Center, back on the agenda. The council had remanded this back to the Planning Commission. And what we heard from you last time was that the applicant would withdraw their application and resubmit one that would go to you for a decision as opposed to the Planning Commission. So what's the status of that?
Okay, so the status hasn't changed very much. We did receive a complete application for the administrative conditional use permit for the use of the deck. They are required to submit for a business license, and then I'll make a determination about their use as an indoor event facility. So basically what's going on is the applicant had requested a special event facility, which covered both their outside deck and their inside deck. Their inside facility. And now what they're going to do is they're going to withdraw that application, file for administrative conditional use permit for the outside and a permitted use on the inside. That doesn't mean that I don't have approval authority on the inside properties as well, using the same conditions of approval that we were going to recommend for the original facility. It just speeds up the use of the inside facility because it's an allowed use while we go through and work through with the neighbors and everybody on the administrative conditional use permit for the outside. I know that's hyper complicated and convoluted and all kind of weird, but we'll do our best to explain it. There is no action by the Planning Commission meeting tonight because they're going to withdraw the application. So there's no application for the Planning Commission to take action on at this point.
We've got some of the busiest weeks of the year coming up.
Absolutely.
Later this month. So will you have a decision then for them, on at least on the indoor?
On the indoor, I will. On the outdoor, I still want to see the conditions that they're going to approve. They're going to submit and make sure that all of those noise conditions and the timing conditions that we had on the previous permit are in place.
So what's the timing on this?
We will not process the administrative conditional use permit until the big permit is completely withdrawn. The regulations only allow us to review one permit application at a time.
Okay. And then finally, some clarifications to the code within the historic district. Anything there that people would care about?
Well, there's actually two things going on in there. The first one is Planner Gron is making our historic district guidelines part of the land management code, so we have regulatory authority and not just guidelines. And two, Planner Newberry has completely rewritten the historic district guidelines, historic district land management codes so that they're easier to read, easier to understand, easier to interpret. There's two or three big things in there the public needs to know about. The first one is we're recommending changing the conditional use process for steep slopes where it has to go to the Planning Commission. We're going to make that one administrative. There's no reason to take the Planning Commission's time on these. We've done enough of them. We think we've got a pretty good hand on it. Number two, the team has worked together to come up with some standards about whether metal roofs are too reflective and too shiny. We've had some complaints. We've had some complaints in Park Meadows, so they're establishing the standards for reflectivity using some science about how much reflection there is versus how much reflected heat there is off of the roof. So it's a balance of those two elements, and there's some science between it.
Okay. Those are the two big
those
ones?
Those are the two big ones coming.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
No, thank you. It's a very long agenda. We have five or six applicants for the Planning Commission now. I hope this doesn't scare them off. We had a couple of illnesses for the last Planning Commission. That's why this thing is so long. We probably won't get to go home for a while, but we appreciate you. Thank you.
When does council schedule make a decision on the app?
We're going to get the applications to the mayor. The mayor is going to decide whether they want to do a subcommittee review or they want to review all five or six applications. So I would expect January.
Okay. Bruce, thank you.
Thank you, Leslie.
42 now. Good morning. Well, living trusts and wills. Avoid the perils of probate is the topic of tomorrow's free lunchtime learning at the PC Mark. On the phone with me, I have the presenter, estate planner, and certified instructor, Matthew Mariner. Good morning to you, Matthew.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you. So I introduced you as an estate planner and certified instructor. Don't attorneys need to be involved in setting up wills and trusts?
Oh, they absolutely do. We've been in business for over 30 years doing it the way we do so we can keep costs down for our clients. We have a legal group that we work through that, as of last year, drafted over 30,000 trusts in addition to wills. So we do it again, this way, so we can keep clients down. We come and sit down with individuals. We teach classes like we're going to teach tomorrow, just to get information out that's appropriate, and we can answer all the questions we need to without it being billable. So it just helps get more information out to the public.
Sure. So what kind of information are you going to be presenting?
The biggest thing that we discuss is what the difference is between a will and a trust, and how a will can help you and how a trust can help you, what the qualifiers are. A lot of people still have the misnomer that you have to be worth millions and millions and millions of dollars to need a trust. And so we talk about what probate is and what the estate tax limits are, because the estate tax limits right now are at $11.2 million, and so people think, oh, no, I have to be worth that much to even need a trust, where the probate limits for Utah are only at $100,000, and that's the qualifier. So we discuss the ins and outs of all of that.
Okay. Who needs a will?
Basically anybody who their value is lower than the probate limit. So because that would help instruct individuals to know, you know, where their money would go and how to conclude their estate if their value was below the probate limit.
Is that the $11 million or the $100,000?
No, that's the $100,000.
Okay. Not everyone needs a trust, and that's what you'll kind of explain?
Correct.
Okay. Let me see. And in terms of this, I mean, are you going to be selling anything? I know sometimes people want the information, but then don't want to be kind of hit up for, you know, the bargain.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, what we've been doing for the last couple of years is teaching informational classes. Now, if they do want to proceed with something more, or they have more in-depth questions, or they have their own documents that they would like to get reviewed, we can set up appointments with them at that point. But our whole purpose for the class tomorrow is just to share the information.
Okay. What's that cost? Can you give us a ballpark in terms of setting up a will or a trust?
Definitely. The going rate for the state of Utah right now is anywhere between about $1,500 and about $5,000 to begin trust work. So it just depends on who you go to, what their policies and procedures are, and things like that. Traditionally, when we draft a general trust, we charge about $1,495, but that also includes the deed work to your home, the funding work to let all the financial entities that you deal with know that you establish a trust. And then when we do will packages, they're typically right around half.
Okay. And I mean, there's a lot, I shouldn't say laws, but there is software out there that can, you know, basically print a will. I mean, is that acceptable?
In some states it is, and it really depends on how specific you want to be. Because you can go print something offline and you can go have it notarized, but it doesn't mean that you'll have all the funding work done that's appropriate, and it won't do your deed work for you and things like that. So there are some software programs that that are out there, but you kind of get what you pay for when you go through a $10 program like that.
Okay, just like everything else. Again, Matthew Marnick, he'll be providing a practical, easy-to-understand comparisons of wills and living trusts. That's happening tomorrow, noon to 1 p.m. I'm guessing you'll leave time for questions as well.
Absolutely.
Okay, Matthew, anything else you want to add?
No, we just look forward to seeing you all there, and bring your questions. And if you have any documents you'd like to have reviewed, you can let me know at that time.
All right. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
KPCW News Time now, 8:48. Good morning. Well, in an email to supporters of the Park City Institute yesterday, the director of the Institute, Terry Orr, headlined her email, "Help us keep the lights on." Now this morning, the Institute announcing that with the exception of two shows, Bob Woodward on Sunday and then New Year's Eve with Sutton Foster, all tickets in all sections will be just $29. Terry Orr joins me now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So this is what we would call a fire sale. I mean, is this a call to the final season of the Park City Institute in the Eccles Center?
Well, we certainly hope not. We have great plans for the future, and there have been great discussions about things that we want to do both inside the Eccles Center and outside down the road. But what we discovered a little late is that this is a national, unfortunately, a national trend. The performing arts are hurting from New York to Los Angeles, performing arts centers, and they're all having the same challenge, which is a lot of the ticket buyers are spending their ticket money on things like Broadway touring shows or giant arena shows and their own home nesting in. So going out and taking a chance on performing arts is hurting everyone.
In your email to supporters yesterday, you say this has been the most difficult in the Institute's 20-plus year existence. And I guess I was surprised by that because it seems like it was pretty tough after Deer Valley Lodging support went away and then we went into the Great Recession and all of that.
And those were tough times, and we were able to pivot in a different way. But we are much bigger than we were back in those days in 2009. Our budget is $3.2 million. That's a pretty big beast to feed every year. We start from zero every year. We don't have an endowment. There is no cushion there. We depend each year raising the money for that season.
Yeah. And, you know, also in the email, you bring up, again, the loss of the summer venue at Deer Valley for some of the financial woes today. And yet, I believe you raised about $500,000 last summer to kind of offset that.
The hole was about $500,000, and we raised about $350,000. We were depending upon ticket sales and sponsorships to make up that. But what was happening there was an upside down, you know, seesaw. So at the bottom was the decreased ticket sales and sponsorships, and on the upside were all the additional costs of the stage, the giant buses we had to hire, the restrooms, the extra tech people. So it put us upside down.
You're still in the hole for that.
We don't, we paid for the stage and the buses and all of that, but we're in the hole because of the ticket sales.
Yeah.
Yes.
After delineating a number of accomplishments in the email, student outreach classes, serving the underserved with tickets, bringing to the stage unknown acts who have since gone on to make it big, you tell supporters that the recipe for survival no longer works today and you need to raise $250,000 by the end of the year. Or what?
I don't know how we recalibrate, but we ended up with the month of December being a perfect storm in that it's always our most expensive show in the wintertime with New Year's Eve. We also had the opportunity to bring in Bob Woodward right as his book was being announced, his agent called. We thought that was something that Park City would want to be a part of, and it has turned out to be our number one best-selling show. We also had the opportunity to bring in the chef, father and son authors who wrote the books that made up the movie Now Beautiful Boy. And with the addiction issues that have been sadly a piece of our community for the past 2 years in a much bigger way, but for a long time here, we thought that was important to bring. Just like in the spring, we have a week of community outreach planned with the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus and the LA Theater Project called It Gets Better, and it addresses bullying and of all kinds.
Yeah, so, but when I say if you don't raise the $250,000 by December 31, then, I mean, do you continue with the rest of the season?
We're looking at what that means.
So you'll know by November or January 1?
Yes.
Yeah, I guess, you know, again, we heard a plea this summer, given the circumstances there, and now this second call. I mean, at what point, Terry, do you just say and walk away, say it can't be done?
Well, we think the community wants us to stay, and this second plea is strangely, you know, yes, it's a little bit of the leftovers from summer, but it's a whole other problem that we probably should have all collectively across the country paid more attention in the spring when everybody's ticket sales started going down last spring. So you will see that there will be tickets reduced at other places. There are venues in Salt Lake, I know, that are struggling as well. It's not, we're talking about New York in the abstract. We're talking about how people's habits are changing in how they entertain themselves.
And I know you're proud of the fact that you've brought to the Eccles stage some amazing acts that we had never even heard of and that, again, are big names today. Is that what's working against you today? I mean, the fact that they haven't heard of your guest? I mean, and you look at just last week, Red Molly and Body Traffic. Yes, I mean, some people came out just raving about the acts, and yet the ticket sales were, you know,
not what we needed.
A quarter
to be.
Of the, yeah, yeah. Quarter of the theater.
Well, there's a couple things. One is that facility was built to accommodate the students of the Park City School District first and foremost, and this is the first year that it fully that the student body fully matches the number of seats there to have an assembly. It was also created to be an anchor facility for the Sundance Film Festival, and it's been very successful in that way. But 1,200 seats in a town of less than 10,000 full-time residents is pretty hard math to do. So we have consistently needed to depend upon people from Salt Lake or Ogden or other places coming in. In terms of how we book, yes, we love the fact that we do both bring you Alvin Ailey or bring you Sutton Foster for New Year's Eve, names that are recognizable. But something like the Red Mollies or Body Traffic, part of what makes us different than a commercial presenter is we have a social contract to make sure that the next John Batiste gets heard someplace. He's now the band leader on the Stephen Colbert Show, but we had him twice, once in the Eccles Center and once outside at Deer Valley, and we didn't have great ticket sales, but people loved him because, of course, he is wickedly talented. And I think that's true of a lot of the you know, I think that we have done a great job in the quality of the performances that we've brought to Park City, and that we don't give people, you know, a regurgitated performance of having an experience that you've had 10 times before.
Well, then let's talk a little bit about back to the fire sale here on tickets. I mean, just assume that 2/3 of the seats now are sold and the other third go to students for $5 a piece. I mean, have you dug yourself out of a financial hole here?
It takes everything. So it takes selling the tickets. It takes, we still have seats to sell in the Yeckel Center. You know, the you can have a brass plaque put on a seat with your name on it. It takes donations. It takes underwriting of the individual performances, which is something that we used to do in a much more successful way. And there are so many places for people to spend their either advertising or charitable dollars that that's been harder to do. So we need renewed efforts in all of those areas.
So what about those who have paid top price for their upfront seats and they're going to have somebody sit next to them that paid $29?
Well, that's true. And we hope that they will be understanding about that and we can offer them tickets to another show that maybe they were on the fence about getting. So that we know that that's the reality.
Yeah. And what have you told your sponsors who have paid probably a lot more than that $79 top price for a regular seat?
All of our sponsors have been very supportive. We have, you know, some really longtime terrific people involved with the organization, and they understand that, you know, that the arts are difficult and the arts in a small town are difficult. We are, I think, still the only ski resort that has a performing arts center in it. So the other, there are some other ski towns that have a hall that maybe 300 people can go and hear a guy with a guitar, you know, kind of thing. But I think we're the only performing arts center.
Yeah. I mean, you had a lot of acts booked in December, really a month that people want to spend with friends and family and maybe a night out at the Nutcracker. Do you feel like you jumped the gun, though, too soon with the $29 price just to have seen what things would have,
no.
If things would have changed in January?
No. We need to do this now.
Okay. So those, I mean, if people went online right now, I mean, it's kind of first come, first serve?
It is, which is the good news, you know, because there are great seats for almost every show. Again, Bob Woodward and Sutton Foster being the exceptions. But and they're important shows, like the Beautiful Boy this weekend. We appreciate Intermountain Healthcare has come on as a sponsor just recently. So they wanted to help and they wanted to make sure that they had people listening to that important conversation.
Okay. Anything else you want to tell folks?
Just, you know, we have been here for 20 years and I hope the organization is here for, you know, another 20. And this is a tricky time and it's not exclusive to our organization. And it does feel, it's unfortunate for us that it comes on the heels of a summer that was completely upside down for us.
Yeah. In terms of the summer, I mean, what about this summer? You're not even going to look that far.
I've been in conversation since last summer about next summer, and there are some opportunities. That's why I say the future is bright. We need to get through now.
Okay. Terry Orr is the director of the Park City Institute. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Leslie.